Welcome to Furry Explained. I'm Finn, a big black cat from the internet, and Furry Explained is my show about furries and their culture. So as you may or may not have known, I recently just moved to a new place to live. And I know I've already brought this up a few times before, but I promise this will be one of the last times I'll reference it. But it's actually a relevant part of the story this time, because a big part of moving to a new place to live is updating your identity. I won't get into the details of how it works here in the US, but there's a bunch of forms that you need to sign and documents you need to present to prove that you are who you say you are. And any change that you make to your identity has to be reflected to ensure that you're properly identified in the grand scheme of whatever country that you are a part of. And we go through all of this painstaking and insufferably slow processes because our identity is important. Without getting too abstract, it's how we differentiate ourselves from one another and gives us a very basic sense of uniqueness amongst the other humans on this planet. All of this is to say that furries go through a very analogous process when they decide to join the furry fandom. And while it's not nearly as extensive of a process as establishing residency to a new area, there are still some things that are typically completed before one usually considers themselves an active member of the fandom. And one of those things is creating a fursona, which ends up acting as the identification of someone throughout the fandom. And part of that application process, so to speak, is choosing a species for that particular fursona to have. Now, we've talked about fursona species before, including some of the more popular ones, and even went over the stereotypes that some of them carry. But most of the time, we've talked about species that we not only commonly see in our everyday lives, but are just real in general. Wolves, foxes, cats, even the alligators or snakes from the scaly side of things are all based off of actual, scientifically categorized animals that we all agree to consider real. But those aren't the only animals that can be used to create a fursona. There's no requirement that the representative animal has to be real from a physical sense. There are entire classes of fictional animal species that we don't consider to be real, yet we still have an understanding of what they would look like if they actually were real. There are a number of ways that you can describe this group of animals, but I like to call them mythical creatures, since most of them have some kind of myth or legend behind them that is used as a basis of how we perceive them. And today, we're going to take a look at these mythical fursonas from a couple of different angles. First, as usual, we'll take a look at what would be considered a mythical fursona as opposed to a fursona based off of a real animal. And secondly, we'll investigate not only why these types of fursonas exist as options for prospective characters, but are also slowly but surely growing in popularity, so much so that some might eventually overtake fursonas based on actual animals in popularity. Also, I've been in a real experimenty mood recently, so we're going to try something new to help bring home the thesis of this episode later on in the second half. But I won't spoil it now, you'll just have to wait and see, or hear in this case, to find out. But anyways, welcome to Furry Explained, and we'll get started right here. So I hope we all know what fursonas are by now. And if not, we got a few episodes on the show dedicated to them, so if you're new, give this episode a pause, listen to those real quick, and then come back here when you're done. But if you are familiar with the term, you still might be asking yourself, what is a mythical fursona? Or more specifically, what separates a regular fursona from a mythical one? Well, foundationally, mythical fursonas are fursonas that assume a creature that is mythical in nature. As you might have guessed, mythical is the key word here, because it's the main aspect that separates this category of fursonas from the rest. Obviously, mythical implies that the creatures in this category are what we would consider not real, in the sense that they have no real-world physical representation that would signify that they are living and breathing. We can't have these creatures as pets or companions, we can't go see them in a zoo or do scientific research on them. Creatures of fantasy, you might say. And I would agree with you, though they are a little bit more specific than even that. Mythical creatures are a little more special than their simply fantastical creature counterparts, because typically, they have some sort of story or lore behind them that has been passed down from generation to generation, making them creatures that have kind of existed already for centuries, even though they may not have a physical manifestation. This is different from just a fantastical creature with no rules nor history, and also makes them different from what is commonly called an original species, which honestly requires a whole host of episodes on their own, but in a few words, they are species that come from and are almost specifically reserved for the furry fandom. This classification of not actually real, but more comprehensible than just creatures of fantasy, puts mythical fursonas in a very interesting category. They're almost half-real, where if someone has a fursona of a mythical animal, it's very easy to take that creature and apply the unwritten rules of anthropomorphism to them. These creatures acting more like humans isn't that far-fetched of an idea in the grand scheme of things, since a lot of these creatures actually have direct and indirect connections to the history of humans as well, making them a little less, I guess, random in their role in history. But I keep dancing around the next obvious progression in this conversation. What would constitute an example of a mythical creature that can act as a fursona? Well, if you've been listening to this show for a while, you probably know where this is heading, because it's time to make yet another one of our list of examples. And this time, we're going to be going down one that should prove to be quite interesting, one that consists of a brief introduction to the lore of some mythical creatures. This group of creatures was interesting to compile, mainly due to the fact that it was pretty hard to narrow down. One of the cool things about mythical creatures is that there's so many to choose from, all stemming from different parts of the world and having their own special story as to how they came about. And technically, any of them would suffice as a really interesting fursona to use in the fandom. But we can only go over so much, so if I missed one that you find particularly interesting, I apologize in advance. But I think we have a good group here, outlining some common and some uncommon mythical creatures that are used for fursona characters. And we'll start with one that everyone in the fandom, and even those outside of the fandom, should be particularly familiar with. Dragons. Dragons have fascinated humans for centuries, and thus are one of the most popular species in the fandom, full stop. And I think that's due to just how dynamic of a character that you can create from the dragon base. These large, reptilian-like creatures have been in the folklore of a multitude of cultures worldwide, and subsequently, the beliefs behind them are varied as well. But if we were to narrow them down a bit, the two most popular versions of dragons are from Western and Eastern cultures. The former depicts dragons with wings, four legs, horns, and usually capable of breathing fire, while the latter sees dragons more as large snakes without wings or legs, and are renowned for their intelligence. But that's only two representations of this creature, and even they are typically used as a base to build upon to create a character. You can have a dragon fursona do literally anything, read minds, turn invisible, or even breathe something other than fire, like ice, and still create a character that is not only credible, but unique. This is why they are so common in a fandom that invites creativity. The possibilities are virtually endless when it comes to making a fursona that's based on a dragon. However, with all of that being said, there's one mythical creature that may rival dragons in terms of their popularity. And depending on how you interpret the numbers, they have done so already, by quite a significant margin. One of the few creatures that can rival the popularity of dragons is the werewolf. The werewolf, or lycanthrope, which is usually shortened to lycan, is basically a human that has the ability to transform or shapeshift into a wolf. And because the change from a bipedal human to a quadrupedal wolf is quite tedious to say the least, most folklore splits the difference, with the results being an anthropomorphic hybrid of the two. And that's actually what I mean when I made the claim that werewolves have easily surpassed the popularity of dragons. Because technically, making a wolf fursona is parallel to making a wolf more anthropomorphic, and many of the fursonas generated from wolves are bipedal hybrids of human and wolf. And despite most owners of said characters referring to them as wolf fursonas, they were derived from the exact same calculus, making the terms rather interchangeable depending on the context. But I get that's one side of the coin, with the other being that there are still fursonas that are specifically referred to as werewolf fursonas. And that's fine, I'm not here to denounce the credibility of those characters. The argument of what makes a werewolf is the transformation aspect of it. And basing a character off of that idea is just as valid as making the transformation more permanent. In fact, that further proves the point. The interplay amongst all of these ideas of making a wolf more like a human and a human more like a wolf is fundamentally fascinating and leads to no surprise as to why this specific creature can be found everywhere in the fandom. And alright, even I will admit that was a lot of information to digest, so here, let's have a quick break to breathe a little bit. Don't say I never did anything for you. Alright, let's keep going. While we're on the topic of mythical fursonas that are common in the fandom, we can't leave griffins off of that list. Griffins are interesting because not only are they one of the more common mythical creatures to base fursonas off of, they are the species behind some of the most interesting fursuits out there as well. These hybrid creatures, usually constructed with the body, tail, and hind legs of a lion, and the head and wings of an eagle, show up everywhere wherever you see fursuits. Look at any photo gallery or con vlog of any decently large group of fursuits, and you're bound to find multiple examples of masterfully constructed costumes of these creatures. And there's no real specific reason why these creatures are so popular, but one possible explanation is the fact that they are a hybrid species. We've discussed how popular hybrid species are for fursonas on this show before, and a griffin offers a very easy way to tap into that idea. And it's not like you get a mix of two boring animals. Combining what is commonly referred to as the king of the beasts and the king of the skies instantly raises the cool factor for fursonas based on this particular mythical creature. Now, stepping away from some of the more popular mythical fursonas, let's look at some that I would consider rather underrated. You don't see these creatures too often in the fandom, and it's honestly unfortunate because they are as interesting as the ones that we just went over. And a primary example of this is the Phoenix. For those who don't know, Phoenix is the capital and the most populous city of the state of Arizona, with a population of over 1.6 million people, making it the only state capital with more than 1 million residents. Wait, what? Wrong Phoenix? Oh, that's the wrong script? Oh, wait, here we go. Let's try this again. For those who don't know, the Phoenix is a mythical creature that is closely related to the sun. Its defining ability is its immortality. As in, every time it dies, it obtains new life by arising from the ashes of its previous body. Which again, is just another cool piece of folklore that can be used to create all sorts of different backstories for a fursona. Also, because of its association with the sun, the colors that can be used to create the character itself have such a wide range that it can easily stand out amongst the other bird fursonas and just other fursonas in general. And finally, the last mythical creature that I want to highlight isn't really one creature, but sort of a collection of them. These creatures get as close to as real as possible, but the only reason behind them not actually being considered real is that their existence is only backed by anecdotal evidence. Yes, I'm talking about the cryptids, or animals whose proof of existence is considered insufficient by mainstream science, but still have a widely popular backing behind them. These creatures are great because the options you get behind them are truly fascinating. A lot of them are larger versions of real animals, like the Megaconda. Some have similar ties to mythology like the other creatures we've discussed, like the unicorn. And my personal favorite reason, many of them are just weird, unusual hybrids, like a jackalope. The idea here is options. There are so many great starting points to base a character off of, which can be especially helpful for those who may be struggling with creating a backstory for their particular character. And honestly, there is so much more that we could go over, but they'll all fall back to the same idea. Mythical personas are simply fascinating. And I'm not alone in this thinking. Mythical personas are one of the few categories of characters that are actually accelerating in their growth and popularity. But it's not without reason. In fact, the reasoning behind the growth in mythical personas is almost as interesting as exploring what they are in the first place. And yes, it's a lot more thorough of an explanation than just because they're cool. So, now we have a little bit better of an understanding of what mythical personas are, and in particular, how they have carved their own niche in between personas based off of real animals and completely fantastical animals and original species. As a result, they fit in quite well into the fabric of the process of making a fursona, and have seen a rise in popularity that is only going to continue to accelerate. Which might come as a surprise for some, because it's quite easy to make the argument that because of their more niche and historical backstories, knowing about these creatures takes a little bit more time and research to understand for yourself. And if you were never exposed to this realm of creatures based off of myth and folklore, they wouldn't even be on your radar as an option to make a fursona out of. And those are all very valid arguments, which in many cases still hold true today. But there is a small but significant shift in that thinking, where more and more members, especially new members of the fandom, are being exposed to these creatures and doing the work to learn about them. And there are a few reasons why this is happening, why mythical personas are continuing to grow in popularity. The first, and what I believe is the primary reason why mythical personas are continuing to grow in popularity, is based on an idea that we've been alluding to this entire episode. These creatures, and the subsequent personas that they are based off of, are extremely unique. The furry fandom is based in the arts, and is built around the creativity of its members. You never see the exact same thing twice in the fandom, and that's not a coincidence, it's by design. With this in mind then, it's only natural that members want to make their characters as unique and special as possible, so they get as close as they can to being irreplicable. A good way to show how this idea is materialized is in the creation of hybrids, where in order to differentiate themselves from the multitude of wolves and foxes and the like, many fandom members began to combine two or more separate species into a unique creature to use as their fursona, with something like a fulf being an example of mixing the two previously stated species. But now, even that is starting to become a popular technique of making a fursona. So in an effort to stay ahead of the pack, so to speak, members are now turning to the more niche realm of mythical creatures to base their characters off of. Now, there's exceptions to every rule, and the dragon and the werewolf are prime examples of those exceptions. But we're starting to see a lot more personas based off of lesser-known mythical creatures, all in an effort to stay as unique as possible when it comes to identification within the furry fandom. Another piece of reasoning as to why mythical personas are becoming more and more prevalent in the fandom is that it continues to further the idea behind anthropomorphism in general. Now, I understand that this is a little bit more higher-level thinking about the fandom than usual. I would make the argument that most people join the fandom to make a cute character and find friends, which is great, that's what it's there for. But if you're like me, I'm actually deeply fascinated by the idea of the line between human and animal being blurred, and making detailed, educated hypotheses of not only what that world would look like, but how much it would be changed from our current reality if we were all anthropomorphic versions of our favorite animal. And because this is already a fantasy-based mental exercise, there's no theoretical limit to the types of creatures we can apply to this type of thinking, and mythical creatures actually fit in very well in this philosophical adventure. Not only are many of them already associated with anthropomorphism, but most of these creatures have a rich history to go off of when trying to think about how they would fit in a world of human-like animals. Again, this is more of an abstract reason, but I think it's a valid one. One that many people in the fandom are interested in, and therefore working with characters to see how that idea would all work out. But speaking of history, actually, I think one of the more understated reasons behind the rise of mythical fursonas is the level of storytelling that you can have when creating a character. Now, I'm not saying that you can't have a great backstory behind a more common fursona, because you absolutely can. I've read and heard of some really great ones. But the flexibility that you have with mythical fursonas in terms of how you want their past, present, and future to pan out is extremely dynamic with these specific characters. Due to the built-in features and abilities that these creatures have, you can really let your imagination run wild with the story behind what they do with those characteristics, allowing you to assume not only a unique character, but a unique personality behind that character as well. And you know what, to hopefully prove my point a little here, we're going to do something a little special on this episode. We're going to make a brand new character for Fursona together, based off a mythical creature, and show that, with a little bit of creativity, making something unique from a mythical creature is naturally very easy to accomplish. Let's give this a try. Okay, so I haven't created a new character in a while, and we're gonna do this completely on the fly. I literally have make a new character here on my script right here. So I guess let's start with the mythical creature in question. Let's see. Oh, you know what would be fun? A Hydra. Now, there are various forms and descriptions of Hydras, but in their most basic terms, a Hydra is basically a dragon with more than one head. Some have 9, some have 4, I think, and some have a head that is immortal. But for the sake of speed and simplicity here, ours is going to have 3. Yeah, I think I got it now. A 3-headed Hydra. And I'm actually going to go against my own advice here, but we're actually going to give it a name, well, multiple names first before going into the story. But trust me, if this works out the way I think it will, it's going to make a lot of sense at the end. We're going to name the Hydra itself Sui Shun, Sway-Shun. And the three heads are all going to have their own names and personalities. If we're looking at this beast from the front, the head on the very left is named Eek, the one in the middle is named Lok, and the one on the right is named Pak. Now, as you might imagine, Eek, Lok, and Pak argue with each other all of the time. But the one thing that they are good at, both separately and together as a collective, is convincing others to do things for them. Eek is a master of getting others to trust his word based on his supposed credibility. Whether it's actually true or not, Eek has a way with words that demonstrates that he seems to know what he's talking about, as it shows in the sheer confidence of his delivery and citing of stories that may or may not have happened. Lok can get others to do what he wants because everything he says just makes logical sense. He is exceptional at breaking something down and communicating a complex topic in easily digestible chunks, and loves to use analogies and metaphors to help others make sense of his reasoning behind why you should do something. And last but not least, Pak is great at convincing people to do things by playing with their emotions. He basically has two ways of doing this. He'll either make you feel really good about doing something that he wants you to do, or make you feel really bad for not doing it. He is very good at talking with inspiration and seems to have a knack for using very vivid and touching language to get his listeners emotionally attached to whatever story he's telling. All in all, Eek, Lok, and Pak make up the entity known as Sui Shun, who, using their combined skills, have become one of the most successful traveling salesmen, or sales hydra in this case, in all of the land. They go about their days traveling from town to town, convincing people to sell some of their prized possessions to them at an insanely low cost, and then going to the next town over and selling those items at exorbitantly high prices, convincing their buyers with questionable credibility, semi-flawed logic, and borderline emotional abuse. But it works. And while they may argue about semantics and other stuff that really doesn't matter, they are generally happy with their nomadic lifestyle, getting more satisfaction out of convincing people to do things for them so easily over any money that they may collect out of it. And that's the story of Sui Shun. You see how easy that was? I assure you, that character was made up while I was recording that in real time, and was in no way predetermined or created before I started writing all this stuff down. But hopefully that goes to prove my point. We just created a character that is extremely unique with what I think is a pretty interesting backstory in a matter of minutes. And it was due to the fact that the mythical creature of the Hydra came with the special feature of having more than one head, which would make creating a similar backstory for a character like this difficult to base off of more common species like a lion or a German shepherd. This is a big reason why characters and personas from this particular category of creatures are becoming more and more popular. Not only are these creatures already unique, but they continually stretch the idea of anthropomorphism to even more animals, and provide a fantastic base to create a backstory for a character that has never been seen or heard of before. So yeah, if you ever have the itch to create a new character or persona, give these creatures some consideration. It's hard to find this level of creativity outside the fascinating world of mythical personas. Alright, that concludes this episode of Furry Explained. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening. I really hope you enjoyed it and maybe learned something new today. As always, if you want to continue the conversation about mythical personas or have any other feedback for the show, you can find and follow me on Twitter. I'm at Finn the Panther, and a link to my Twitter is down in the show notes, along with some other resources about mythical personas that you should definitely check out. As always, if you like the show and want to support it, the best way to do that is to follow or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you're on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, make sure to give the show a rating and a review as well. You can also tell people about the show, and if they don't know where to start looking, you can point them to one of our corners of the internet, furry-explained.com or pod.link/furryexplained. Thank you so much for doing so, and we'll be back next week for another episode of Furry Explained. But until then, stay wild out there. Peace. Oh, by the way, Sui Shun is not a closed character or anything like that. It's a character that anyone who listens to this show can use. So if you want to make art or make a persona that is similar to them, go right ahead. I'd honestly love to see how some of you depict them. And I really hope you got the gist behind the character in general. Eek, Lock, and Pack being connected to ethos, logos, and pathos, all methods of persuasion, and that's where the name Sui Shun comes from. I don't know, I thought it was a cool idea, and we'll see if these three pop up in the future sometime. But anyways, actually, keep an eye out on my Twitter this week. I may or may not be announcing a new content creation project that you might be interested in. But that's all I'll say on it for now. Otherwise, have a good rest of your week. Bye.